does that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right.
Behold the glory that is
a little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
On a Windows Vista machine.
You'd think
there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk, and this is Michael, Tech Talk counselor, and I think I'm trying. We're going to work it. We're going to see if it's going to happen today. We're trying to bring on our good friend, Mr. Dave Sparky Saganaki. Dave?
I'm here.
Oh, my.
Good morning, everybody.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it. Of course, this is the day that we don't get Jay to come with us, but we got Dave, like, immediately, instantly, and it's working. This is great. I think we got... We got a good show here going already, and it's only 2 minutes in.
Yeah, we've actually managed a Skype call.
Yay!
It's the little things. It's the little things in life that make me happy and that keep the world going around, I say. Man. Well, hey, well, welcome. It's shaping up to be a great week. We got a ton of stuff to talk about. I know you can't stick around for the whole time, but we can definitely keep you talking at least for a little bit. I'm not even going to try to direct the conversation. We only have you for a little while, Dave. Why don't you tell me what's exciting you?
I don't know. Hey, it's is it too late for back to school?
No.
Are you ready? No. Yes.
It's not too late for back to school. Absolutely not. We just started this week. We just my kids, anyways. I know some kids have started like 2 or 3 weeks ago, it just seems insane to me. But where I grew up, nothing ever happened until after the 1st of September because of the crop and farming season. So I'd say shoot, if you've got some good back to school stuff, let's rock it.
Well, you've talked a great deal about Chromebooks.
Yes.
You like Chromebooks, right?
Yes. Yes,
so
absolutely.
Would you recommend that for a returning student or a new college or university student? Is that something you'd recommend?
Not only would I, but I have and do. As a matter of fact, now there's some things that you need to do up front to make sure that that's the correct choice for you. I'd confirm, number one, that the work that you're going to do and the documents that you can create and things like that are going to be acceptable to your school. Now, you have a lot of options with your with your Google Docs and also too with Microsoft Online applications now, so you can probably make it fit and work. But the other thing that's probably even more important than that, confirming that you've got solid Wi-Fi everywhere you're gonna want to use it. I mean, you can do a lot of things offline, but really, if you're gonna go full Chrome, I'd still say make sure you've got that solid connection everywhere you're gonna be hanging out.
It doesn't sound like exactly a full-throated endorsement. And what about brands? I mean, there's several different vendors cranking out Chrome, inexpensive Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Chromebooks are what? Anywhere from $200 to $350, maybe. Models.
They go up from that. Yeah, you can get, in fact, if you go straight to Google and get a Chromebook from them, they have some very high-end Chromebooks that will run you close. I mean, up to high-end laptop prices, $800 to $1,000 and so. Now I have a Chromebook myself that I use regularly, and I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of it. Mostly good though. And we purchased a Samsung Chromebook, and it was in that sub $200 range. So it was a very inexpensively priced Chromebook, and I've got it configured and set so that everyone in the family can log in. We all share Google information and do a lot of stuff between our various Google accounts, with Google Calendar sharing and Google Mail, of course, and also to Google Drive, which is where you do your document editing and things like this. And being able to share that information is fantastic. And like I said, having the ability, which seems much, much cleaner on the Chromebook, to switch between users than it ever felt in Windows is a really nice benefit. So,
if you're sharing a box.
Exactly. Yeah, I highly recommend it in that environment for sure. If you've got, you know, money for one device, and you need to be able to share it with your kids, maybe for schoolwork, maybe they're not in college yet, maybe they're junior high level, they need a device, a laptop, but you don't want to get one for each of them, it's really slick to do the Chromebook and let them each have their own login. It really does have its own look and feel based upon how they configure it, and they can have access to their own stuff. So that's really good. The ugly sides of it are the keyboard feels cheap. I hate that. I type so much. I can't stand a cheap keyboard. Of course, you can plug one in or use a USB one if you want to. But you've got some little things like that. The mouse pad. Oh gosh, I hate touchpads for mice. It drives me insane. I can't do it. So I'm always plopping another mouse into that as well. But like I said, if you're going back to school, you need something cheap. It's almost disposable, really, some of them, because they're so cheap, which is great, because if you do drop it and crack it, you pick up a new one. And the beautiful thing is, just like with your Android phone, if you've got it set up and configured, you log into that new machine, and it's exactly what it was when you dropped the other one. You're no loss of anything at all.
Yeah, disposable laptops. And how much memory does your Samsung have, and what's the battery life like?
The battery life is fantastic. We easily get a full day of usage out of it. Now, we're not doing a lot of video streaming and things through it. It does have an HDMI out, though, so I have used it that way
before. That's a big plus, right?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, particularly if you haven't invested in a Chromebook that's got the larger screen, or you do want to do some video viewing around campus or at home or in your dorm room or whatever. You plug that HDMI into an HDMI-ready TV or a larger computer monitor, and you're all set. Of course, it's Chrome, so you could also, too, get one of those Chromecast dongles and use that, and I do that as well. The nice thing with the Chromecast dongle is it takes the processing off of the Chromebook, so it extends your battery life and all that. What was your original question?
Battery life and memory. But I've got another question before we move on. What about the Chromecast dongle? What is it? Does that wirelessly go to your TV, or is that just for broadcast?
So the Chromecast dongle actually plugs into your TV. It uses an empty HDMI slot. It needs power connected, so there is another wire there. It's not just a real, plain, clean little dongle off the back. You do have to have that power connected to it. But the cool thing is it uses whatever network your Chromebook is on. You have to be on the same local area network. You're on that same network, and then you can send pretty much anything on your laptop, on your Chromebook, out to your TV wirelessly through your network. So you're not having to connect and pull wires and plug things in and out and all the other stuff. And in fact, if you've got a Chromecast dongle, the HDMI output port on your Chromebook may be irrelevant, maybe completely inconsequential to you. You don't need it. So you have to consider those kind of things. If you're going to pay extra for that, maybe you don't need to if you've already got the Chromecast dongles. I mean, they're less than $50. In fact, they're closer to the $25-$30 range now. So real easy to pick up and use those. And that includes YouTube. If you've got a subscription to HBO Go, if you've got Netflix, Hulu, et cetera, all those natively will push to your Chromecast, and you can also take most other tabs that that you would want to blast, and you can push those to it as well, even if they don't have a native app for it. So very, very cool stuff. I did not get a Chromebook, to get back to your original question. I did not get a Chromebook. I intentionally did not get one with a tremendous amount of storage space. We have, I believe it's 16 gig is all the storage space
it's
got. Don't need it. It's all cloud-based. I did reserve that 16 gig of space, which is more than enough for a local storage of Google Drive, basically. So all of the docs and things and spreadsheets, just on the off chance that we're ever in a place without Wi-Fi, we could still do some work on our spreadsheets and so on. And that's worked out reasonably well. It's less seamless than you would hope, but it's not insurmountable, I guess, is the bottom line. I believe it's got 4 gig of RAM in it as well, more than enough for what we're doing. I occasionally do.
That's a lot. I guess that's like standard these days,
yeah,
right? 4 gigs.
Yeah. And occasionally we do chunk into, you know, some delays and buffering issues because the RAM is getting clocked out. But just like you would on a PC, you say, hey, time to reboot, you know, especially if you've had like 4 people logging into it at different times. I do think some of the processes continue running. Also, Chrome itself, I don't know for sure about the OS, but I know that the Chrome browser, which of course is what the Chrome OS is built around, is not a memory efficient program. It does have some leaks and some problems, so it never hurts you to kind of reboot that thing. I love the solid state drive action, though. I mean, I tell you, rebooting is not like rebooting your XP laptop from the 90s, you know. This thing is often on in a heartbeat. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And you said the battery life was good. What would you estimate it to be?
If you're doing document editing and things like that, and you're on a standard, you got a pretty strong Wi-Fi, so it's not constantly trying to check and reset that and things, we're getting at least a full day's worth of work out of it, like 10, 12 hours out of it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Again, video streaming and audio streaming and things like that, you're going to clock that out a lot quicker, in fact. But I just got a note from outside of the studio here. We had our levels up a little high. I apologize if people, if I was peeking out there when I was speaking, that wasn't just due to my excitement over the Chromebook. It was a little poorly set.
That's good. You're excited. So, a PC World actually has just published a review of the Asus C200, and that runs in a $250 range. Mm. And they give it fairly good marks. For an 11-inch Chromebook, once again, 16 gigs of storage. I think it's also 4 gigs of RAM. Mm-hmm. Bay Trail processor. But even though it is a Bay Trail, it's a slower one. Mm-hmm. So, but they say for the money, they recommend it. And so, you know, but I mean, you have recommended that, but, and you think Chromebooks are a better tool to take to school than a Windows or an iOS machine at this point?
Like I said, it depends. The couple of things, there are some things that it's not good at. Now, if you're going to your, you know, freshman year in college, liberal arts degree or math, you know, something relatively standard like that, I would say absolutely your Chromebook, if you get one or get a keyboard that you can live with to use, that's my big hangup. I think absolutely. I don't think you're gonna notice a lot of miss. If, however, you're going to school for something specific that, you know, really leans on some specific aspect of technology, so I'm thinking graphic design, for example, you're not going to find the tools available for the Chromebook that are going to easily allow you to do digital editing, video editing, things like this. Yes, you can do them. Will they work better on a Windows machine or your Mac? Absolutely, they're going to work better on those. You're going to go faster. You're going to have less difficulty. It's not going to hang up, and you're actually going to be able to install applications. That's the biggest down, is that if there's applications that your school is expecting you to use for classes, you need to make sure those are going to work on your Chrome, because they probably won't if it's an application they want you to install. You know, there's becoming less and less of that. Like I said, especially if a lot of schools expect you to write and submit your documents in, it used to be in Microsoft Office. That's actually shifting now. And most higher ed institutions that I talk to, they either have already or are at least contemplating or have a hybrid acceptance of the Google Docs stuff, and you can submit directly to your professor through Google Docs without even having to print, you know, export, you know, break out the can of whiteout, whatever it was that we used to do back in the day, and get it done that way. So
I still have whiteout around. You never know.
That's right.
You might run out of cream for your coffee or something.
That's right. I can hardly even see my computer screen anymore. I've used so much whiteout on it. So.
That's right. I can relate. So, and also we discovered, I don't think either one of us have done it, but you can actually audition the Chrome operating system in your Windows PC through the Chrome browser.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't have that in front of me. I can't point you to it. But if you simply Google it, how to audition Chrome on a Windows computer, it'll show right up.
Absolutely. You can do that, which is built in kind of a little bit easily into the way that Windows 8 uses the Chrome browser. Or the other thing you can do, I mean, if you want to go, you know, whole hog onto it, is actually you can get and create for yourself very, very, I mean, shockingly easily, if you have just an iota or two of tech ability, you can go in and create for yourself a bootable USB flash drive that will run and jump into a version of the Chrome OS. Now, unfortunately, it's not the full Chrome OS, so you're going to miss some features. Some things like flash integration and like that are missing from it, but you can get at least a feel for how it would be to have a Chromebook and run that right off, like I said, right off of your USB flash drive, or even a CD if you want to. Do it off a CD.
Exactly. And you're right about that. I'd forgotten that aspect of it. To do it right through your browser, you'd have to have Windows 8 or higher. Mm-hmm. So if you have an older version of Windows, then a USB stick or a CD would be a better way to do that. Yep.
And of course, in just 35 days here, Windows 9. I guess that'll support it too, I would
expect.
Well,
that's the rumor. Is that confirmed now? Last I heard, it was rumor.
I'm still seeing it just as a rumor, but it makes sense. The Verge keeps reporting that more and more people are reporting that. Of course, you know, if the more and more people that are reporting that are people like me, that really just doesn't mean anything.
Or actually the opposite. Likely to be true.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if this does come through, though, or when it does come through. I'm hoping that it pushes closer to that September 30. I'm always, even though I'm a little bit further away from the Windows reliance and environment, it's always an exciting thing when Windows does come out with a new operating system. And this will be the first one that's under the new CEO, Satya Nadella. So that's,
But he hasn't been in the chair that long. And also, one of the reasons they're coming out with it so soon is because you can't, after Halloween, after October 31st, you won't be able to buy a new PC with Windows 7 on it. Mm-hmm. And Windows 7 has been actually outselling Windows 8 up until this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the Windows 8 Windows 9 will look more like Windows 7, little bit more, you know, with the start button and that sort of thing.
Yeah, which I think is a good idea. I think it's a good way to go. A little bit, they need to pull a little bit back from that Windows 8 user interface change that they underwent. This seems to happen with Microsoft. And that's why that's why when they come out with new stuff, it's always exciting, because they either, you know, they have like this pendulum swing internally where they go, you know, hey, let's go all the way Vista. And then everybody screams because Vista is horrible. And you're like, oh, okay. We'll take the good parts of Vista and we'll pull it back somewhere in the middle and wind up with a Windows 7. So it's kind of like XP Vista-ish, you know, and it's a really good solid thing. It happened again here. We got Windows 8. It the pendulum swung out too far. My guess is, just like you said, they're going to pull that back in. They're going to take the really good stuff out of Windows 8. They're going to combine it with the stuff that people were screaming about losing from Windows 7 and come up with what's going to be, I think, the next really good version of Windows to invest in and to move forward with. So that's my expectation.
Well, let's hope.
Yeah.
It always seems like they go out beyond the cutting edge, as you said, and then kind of winnow it down.
Yep.
for the next edition. And that more modest or conservative edition tends to be more popular than the really radical one.
Yep. Yep. Well, and what's interesting too, you know, I think it's interesting that Nadella is going to be the one that's releasing this, is that he really explicitly rejected former CEO Ballmer's plans and said that they want to become a productivity and platforms company, you know, not the direction that Ballmer was going to. And Ballmer, not coincidentally, just stepped down from the board as well. He is no longer part of the Microsoft board even. So we'll see. Instead of a devices, and I should say, so Ballmer's vision was of a devices and services company, and instead we're going to see productivity and platform. And how Satya Nadella defines that, and how that is expressed in the Windows 9 launch, I think is going to be one of the interesting stories that we'll have to talk about in the next month here.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see how it looks.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really interesting. And it's so contrary to what often happens, especially with Microsoft, that they announce it's going to be ready by a deadline, and then it's late, and it's late, it's late. And here now, there's not even an announcement. It's a secret. No, there's been no official announcement from Microsoft, and the rumors are pretty strong that it's going to be here on November 1st. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
We'll see. Now, yeah. I'm like further away from Microsoft than I've ever been in my life. So this is a little bit of an outsider view for me. I've always been a Microsoft guy, and then I was also an Android guy with the phones, you know. But I've got an iPad now. I've got a Chromebook at home, and I'm working right now on it still got the Windows stickers all over it. It used to be a Windows 7 laptop, is now been converted and updated to Linux, and it's actually a Linux Mint flavor that I've got on here. And I don't see myself really going back to Microsoft, like going out and saying, oh, I gotta buy that Microsoft 9 to put on my old junky clunky laptop here. I don't see myself doing that, but
and
I guess,
have we talked about your motivation for doing that before,
the Linux conversion,
or just your kind of easing away from Windows?
You know, I don't know if we've really discussed the motivations for it. I mean, I think there's a combination of them for me. I don't know if it would match anybody else's motivations for doing things. One was really a desire to experiment and play and have fun. I've used Linux in work environment many times, never really had it on a desktop, like, you know, 24/7 sort of computer that I wanted to operate on. So I thought that would be cool. The other thing, too, was I originally put Chrome on here, and that was my test of that Chrome, but it wasn't the full-flavored Chrome that you get with a Chromebook. So I was disappointed in its operation. And that was one thing, is I needed more of the functionality that a Linux would give me. And when it really came down to it, the two factors for putting this on instead of going with Microsoft, putting Microsoft back on here, were actually three factors: speed, size, and price. Linux is very, very fast, especially fast to boot, fast to operate. Everything happens in it quickly. Also, too, I didn't want to put another, you know, 800 gig drive into my box. My hard drive had died. So what I did was I put in a 20 gig, a small, tiny little drive, 20 gig solid state drive.
You're so cheap. You are so cheap. Hard drives are cheaper than they've ever been before. You can get a terabyte for like $60 or something.
Yeah, but
You went rummaging around through your drawers, right? And you found this old 20 gig you know, 4,200 RPM drive.
No. This is a solid state drive.
Oh.
Yeah, I went out and I bought a solid state drive. Now, to get like a 100 gig solid state drive, still fairly expensive. You know, not like, you know, bank breaking, but once
not like it used to be, no.
Yeah, but once you get to the point where you're going to put money down for, you know, 100 to 200 gig solid state drive, you might as well just buy a new dang machine, you know, at that point. Yeah. You're really not saving anything. So, but I was able to get a 20 gig drive for like around, I think it was $25 to $30.
Yeah,
I was able to find it.
Right.
So I grabbed that, put it in the laptop. And this is the thing too, of course, it's got to be a laptop internal size drive that will fit my, you know, 6 year old Sony. So, you know, this is the other thing too. So I get this, I put this in, it's blindingly fast, it's great. And so what can I put on it though? I can't put a full-blown version of Windows on a 20 gig drive. I mean, for heaven's sake, you know, that's 18 to the gig.
You could but you couldn't type anything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
you couldn't type any text whatsoever.
Yeah, so I threw in Linux. My one thing I'm a little, I may wind up recreating it here at some point, is I went with a version of Linux Mint, which is like the beta version. It's a Cinnamon, it's called, and there's a couple things that I keep running my head into that I know are not a problem on some of the other flavors of Ubuntu. So I may wipe it and go. And that's the beautiful thing today too, is you know, so I mentioned those reasons for doing it, and the great thing too is just the ease of this. Is you literally, I could today say, oh gosh, I don't like this, I'm going to install some completely different Ubuntu version operating system, wipe my machine. I can get that done in less than an hour, including having all of my favorites and everything else come through, because I'm working primarily in the cloud with Google. And then with the Ubuntu stuff, you know, it just, I'm not saving stuff online. I'm just not saving stuff on my hard drive. That's why the 20 gig is more than enough for me. It's all connected through the cloud. And that's the
good news and bad news about Linux, right? There's so many flavors and versions that, you know, it's easy to change. That's the good news. The bad news is that there's so many different versions. Oftentimes, they'll have interoperability issues between the different versions. Mm-hmm. Michael, I'm sorry, I've got to go.
Oh.
You know, it was so great. I've had a great time. It was like the old days when it was just you and I in the studio having a nice chat.
Yeah, so, I agree. This was wonderful.
Yeah. Sorry, I have to go.
Well, thank you for joining us, Dave. And absolutely. I know the show's not going to be as good after you leave, but
it's bound to be better. And of course, Jay won't be here this week. Jay Garman, and we miss him terribly. And I wish he was here to hand the baton to. But anyway, see you next week.
Okay, take care. Have a great weekend, Dave, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
Take care. See you next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Dave Sparky Saganaki. That was great of him to join us, even if it was only for a little bit here, but that was still cool. Love to have him on. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm actually going to do something we don't normally do right in the middle of the show, which is cool, is to actually do the spots, promos, PSAs, IDs, and all that other good stuff that we're supposed to do in the middle of the show. I'm going to do them now instead of at the end. So hang on. Don't go away. Also, too, do not forget that you are listening, of course, to WRLR on 98.3 LPFM. We are a volunteer radio station. We are a community radio station. That means that we create shows for you, and we are supported by you. The WRLR 98.3 FM the celebration of the studio is going on tonight at the Round Lake Civic Center. You can come in, you can buy tickets at the door. It's going to be a great night of music and fun, celebrating the fantastic volunteers and DJs we've got here, as well as celebrating the community and the things we've given back to the community. So don't forget about that. That's happening tonight. If you get there about 5:30, you'll easily be able to get a ticket. You'll be able to get a seat. You'll be able to take part in the food and nosh and all the other stuff that's going on, and then stick around for a couple hours and see your favorite DJs and hosts, as well as listen and experience just a really great night of fun. And that's going to be happening tonight, like I said, at the Round Lake Beach Civic Center in downtown Round Lake Beach. I'm going to be right back at you in just a minute. Don't run away. You are listening to Tech Talk.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
Galaxy Stone Design is a proud sponsor of WRLR. Galaxy Stone Design has over a decade of experience in the fabrication and installation of granite and marble surfaces in the Chicagoland area. Their team of professionals handles commercial to residential projects. Galaxy Stone Design inventory includes granite, marble, hand stone, and siltstone surfaces. For more information, their telephone number, 847-271-7233. Their website is galaxystonedesign.com.
Brett Football returns right here on WRLR for another season for 2014. You can catch all the action right here on WRLR 98.3 or WRLR.fm. Our opening game kicks off on Friday night, August 29th. The Eagles of Lakes will fly into Grays Lake North and try to tackle the Knights in Grays Lake. Join us with all the action beginning with the pregame at 6:45 and the kickoff at 7:15. WRLR has the best coverage in Lake County football right here each and every week on 98.3 FM.
Join Rusty Silver and Pat Cameron every Saturday from 8 to 10 a.m. for a comprehensive look at what's happening in the world of sports. They'll cover national news in sports as well as professional, college, and Lake County high school sports every week on the show. Got questions or comments? Email them at sportscorner@wrlr.fm. So join Pat and Rusty every Saturday from 8 to 10 a.m. for the Sports Corner right here on 98.3 FM WRLR.
And we're back. You are listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM. Hey, also, too, don't forget to stick around. We got Rob Schott first on deck. Rob Pitt, he's going to talk a little bit about science and all sorts of cool stuff going on in technology and science today. So it's a real good follow-up to our show. If you like this, I guarantee you're probably going to like Rob even more. And you know, so talking about things we like and don't like, though, so we just had a lot of fun talking about Chromebooks, of course. I got to recap a little bit of a conversation. A few weeks ago, I don't know if you recall, we had conversations about Facebook and the Facebook Messenger, and there was this huge, huge outcry about the new Facebook Messenger and the in-app permissions that it was requiring or requesting from your Android devices. And there were, in particular, there was a guy named Sam Fiorella who wrote some articles that were posted and shared and reshared and all over the web talking about how the word he used was insidious, the insidiousness of Facebook Messenger's Android mobile app. And, you know, kudos and thumbs up for appropriate use of that word insidious. But it turns out, and like I said, I had a good friend of mine, Ben, on the Facebook actually asking, how real is this? Should we really be worried about the Facebook Messenger app? Or is this just another case of people trying to get clicks by scaring us? And I got to say, I lean towards the latter. Review on that is that, you know, yes, they're asking for a lot of application access that seems on the face of it to be kind of scary and weird, and we already have a concern about the Facebooks and the Zuckerbergs and the Googles and you know, Sergey Brin and all these guys collecting too much information and having too much access to it. Now, he goes a step further, this Fiorella, and is like, you know, hey, they're asking for access to your phone. That means they could record and track all of your phone conversations. But you know, the thing of it is, and I think what's a more pressing concern on this, and we sort of just touched about this a little bit a few weeks ago, I'm going to get a little more in depth on it, is that these requests that are being made, if we're going to be worried about the fact that they're doing this, you ought to be worried about pretty much everything that you install on your phone. All of these applications that we put in, including Facebook, Facebook Messenger, but you know, take a look at the last game you installed. You know, the one that keeps coming up, it's funny, is this Kardashian game, Life with Kim Kardashian or something along those lines. It asks for nearly the same information that your Facebook Messenger does for a lot less reason for it. Now, some of the stuff you can kind of go down and point by point, but the bigger concern really is that why does Android do it this way and they kind of put it in your face? That's a good thing, right? You want to be informed that these apps are potentially going to make use of these services and could do damaging things to you or your identity. But part of that is a problem with the way that Android is designed. Because Android is set up to work on so many different devices, unlike iOS, which is really set up just to work on the Apple devices, it forces the app developers to pre-declare whatever applications and resources that they're going to make use of or think they might want to make use of, and so pre-approve the access rights to them. Now, it seems like a fine, you know, very granular sort of thing. Like, why? So what? You know, the difference is with a device that is running iOS, the application request comes in stream. So that, for example, the Facebook Messenger app, you install it and you do nothing but use it with the internal Facebook contacts that you have. And it basically doesn't ask you for a lot of information or access rights, except to, of course, to your Facebook account. Then comes that day when you say, oh gosh, I want to actually make a phone call to this individual through my Facebook Messenger app, which is something you can do. It's actually a very cool little something you can do because it's a free call then. It doesn't use your cell minutes. Now comes the point where iOS would pop up a thing saying, hey, are you sure you want to let this application make use of your phone and microphone and et cetera, your contact info, whatever it is that it needs access to do that thing? And you can decide at that moment, yes, I want to do this. I approve it doing this. And this is the thing that I want to do. So I'm going to give it access. Android does not work that way. Android says, if you have the possibility of entering a calendar information or, you know, changing your calendar based upon something that's going to happen in your app, you need to get pre-approved access for that from the user. So when you install Facebook Messenger on your Android, you get this very, very long list of what seems like, you know, air quotes, insidious requests for information and access to your phone, including device and app history, cellular data settings, contacts and calendar access, your location, SMS, phone. I mean, it just goes on and on. Photos, media files, camera, microphone, Wi-Fi connection info, all this stuff. All of these, I could go down point by point and tell you why they need it. And in fact, if you go and you look at the response that Facebook had to this concern from people, they do. Mark Zuckerberg and his team, they go right down the line and they say, this is what I need this for, this is what I need that for, and this is why it's happening within the Facebook Messenger app. So, long and short of it, and I apologize, we're not able to accomplish the latter part of that, right? But the long and short of it is, yes, it is asking for a lot of access. No, this isn't something you should specifically be afraid or worried about. However, it is, of course, something that, you know, you probably need to at least keep in mind and understand that, you know, this can be or could be a concern. If not with this app, maybe one of the other ones that you're running into or using. So it's a good thing to know about. It's a good thing to be aware of. Is Facebook particularly evil in the way that they're doing it? I would say, if anything, they're probably one of the least likely to really abuse this problem or this access. But, you know, you never know. If you're worried about it, don't use your phone. I guess, is what it comes down to, unfortunately. And I, like I said, we already talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, so I'm not going to go hugely in depth into it. I do want to talk about, though, there are some other things that have been happening as far as, boy, being afraid and being scared about real stuff. there's a lot of things that we need to worry about. Yet again, I'm thinking I need to maybe get some theme music for Hack Attack of the Week and the security moment or something like this, because this seems to be coming up now pretty much every single week that something new and frightening is happening in our security world. Today, just got a little note that more than 1,000, not 1,000 stores, more than 1,000 U.S. retailers. That means large groups of stores could be infected with malicious software lurking in their cash register computers. This would allow hackers to steal your financial data. This is coming. This isn't coming from, Target Corporate or somebody like that. This is from the Homeland Security Department. They said this yesterday. They came out with this. What they want people to do, the government actually not only is saying, hey, we're afraid of this, but they're also saying, here's something you can do about it. They want businesses of all sizes, large, small, tiny, one person, it doesn't matter, scan your point-of-sale systems. The software is called BackOff. It was actually discovered last year, last October. But the problem is that even though it's been known for a while, people are just not finding it because it hadn't been flagged by your standard antivirus programs until this month. I'm not sure exactly why that was. I don't know why the heuristics of the top virus programs were not finding it. It may be one of those that has to be looked with, has to be found with a database look, which is different from a heuristic look where they can compare activity and say this is a suspicious activity versus this is definitely known in our database as a bad actor. Maybe in the latter category. So earlier this month, of course, why did this come up now and why is it dramatic? Have you ever used UPS? Well, guess what? It found infected computers. The UPS found infected computers in 51 of their stores across the country. Now, it said the UPS came out and said, hey, we found out this happened, but it wasn't aware of any fraud that resulted from the infection, but the hackers might have taken your name, your address, your email address, your payment card, your credit card. Oh, geez. It just goes on and on, doesn't it? As we said last week, if you didn't get nailed by Target or, get a little, somebody take you by the shoulders and shake you back and forth a little bit, you should be realizing by now that there's nothing that's safe. there's nothing you can do. You shouldn't expect anybody else, basically, to manage your data. And that includes even things that you might think are completely secured, like your Gmail app on your smartphone. It turns out that Gmail smartphone app is incredibly easy to hack for anybody that has either direct access to your phone or can convince you to install an application that's got just a little extra Philippe in it that will let it kind of break in and do what it needs to do. The researchers, now these are U.S. researchers, and they're working on Android phones in some capacity, in fact, even working side-by-side with Google. These are from Michigan and California, though. These researchers were able to hack into Gmail accounts, they claim, with a 92% rate of success. They exploited a weakness in smartphone memory, which basically holds onto the account information and account data, and then we're able to use that to get the information, stealing login and password details, and sending it back to another location, another server where then they can make use of that. I will say it, and I'll say it again, and I'll keep saying it. It doesn't matter how strong your password is anymore. I firmly believe that the password strength is, it should be minimally strong, but no stronger than that, because it just doesn't make a difference anymore. You just need to use different passwords everywhere you go, number one, and number two, everywhere that really matters to you, two-factor authentication. That's the way to go. My Google is two-factor authentication. And yes, it's a pain in the behind sometimes when I want to just get in there and access my email on a different computer or location or spot, but it's not such a pain that I wouldn't want it to be there. The beautiful thing with two-factor authentication, I know we've talked about it before, I'm going to probably tell you the same thing three or four times as we move forward into this increasingly insecure world of ours, is the ability. What you do is instead of just a password, you also define another point of contact for you that you can receive a special code that will then allow you true access. So once you type your password in, it then asks you and says, hey, I'm going to send you a special authentication code to the smartphone, cell phone, home phone, whatever that you've defined and said that you want to get access to. And once you enter that code in, I'll know it's really you. Now, that won't help you tremendously if you don't have your phone locked down or if someone steals your phone, you know, the hardware itself. But what it does help you from is stuff like this, where someone gets your login and your password and your account info, and they're trying to access you from Russia or New York or wherever, they can't do it because that second level of authentication is going to go straight to you. And you'll know, number one, that someone's trying to access your account. And number two, they will be kept from getting into it. So good stuff all around there. But again, just be aware that this is going to happen. There's nothing secret anymore. There's nothing that you can hide. And not only that, but I've got two different places that have tried to see if they could create sort of a secret access or secret communications venue. Now, one is actually called Secret, and the whole idea of Secret was it was going to be an online free place you could confess. You just go on there and put anything you want that you're curious, that you hate, that you need to tell somebody because it's just it's itching at you and you got to get it out. And so stuff like postings like I'm late, I don't know how to tell my husband, especially since he's already had a vasectomy. Or this is the third girl I've dated in 3 weeks and none of them know about each other yet. So these are the kind of things people post on here, and they're completely secret. Nobody knows who they are except, of course, people do. They're not completely anonymous and untraceable. It turns out that security researchers Benjamin Caudill, who is a name that comes up frequently, and Brian Seeley, they were able to identify the names of their friends. So with their contact list that they had, they were able to break this down and figure out who those people were. And they were also even able to find out another post, they just for interest, it was called Is Lucy the Cutest Dog? Was a post. It turns out that one comes from the founder of Secret, David Bittow, who's an ex-Google guy. So this is a problem, obviously. Secret is not responding to requests for comment. And they're just they're going to have to figure this out, or there's there's just, I mean, if the whole thing you build your business on is the fact that it's an anonymous, unhackable, untraceable, messaging thing, then and then that falls apart, I don't know where you go from there. So it'll be interesting to see if Secret survives. Leak is having somewhat similar problems. Now, Leak, if you don't remember, I actually brought this up as a cool site of the week a few weeks ago, although I was a little concerned about the potential usage of it. Leak is a website that lets you send an anonymous email to anyone you want to. You can put in a little clue, like it says from a friend, from a coworker. But, you know, so the examples that they use on the Leak website were things like, Rusty, your breath smells. This is coming from a friend, and I'll say Rusty's breath does not smell. He's sitting right outside there. But if you wanted to, and you didn't want him to know that it was coming from you, you could do this kind of thing. And of course, though, unfortunately, Leak now is shut down because of the reasons that I suggested, and it might be shut down, such as legal issues with people sending things that were either inappropriate or actionable legally. No, it got suspended because they can't find a platform on which to process and send the emails. I think because of those concerns about legality, the hosting services and servers out there are saying, I don't want to deal with this. I do not want to be a part of this thing. And so they're not happening right now. It'll be interesting to see. These seem to keep coming up and coming up. There seems to be a real deep-seated desire for individuals to be able to communicate in an anonymous fashion and do it through the web, do it through our emails and so on. And unfortunately, it's not looking like that's real practical or possible. We just keep running into example after example after example where these so-called anonymous interactions wind up not being so anonymous after all. And, I think that'll just continue. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I think it's good that we know that if we're going to say something to someone that there's a possibility that they're going to know who you are. It's not a completely anonymous world that we live in, and it shouldn't be. I think it brings a sense of empathy and understanding to us when we say things to people that are hurtful, and you know that they're going to know you're the one saying it's hurtful, and maybe you'll even have the chance to see that hurt in their eyes and that pain. That is something we don't want to lose, I think, for our sake of our humanity, is understanding the pain that we can cause as well as the joy that we can give when we do provide good and positive things to those around us. So, I'm of a mixed mind on this, as I am as well about net neutrality, as you know. But if you are not of a mixed mind about net neutrality, if you've got something very specific and clear that you want to say, you can let the FCC know. Now, it's been around for a little while. You've had some time to do that. Of course, James Oliver went on his show, it's like The Daily Show, but it's on HBO, so maybe you didn't see it, but it created this huge, huge push for people to complain about the regulations not being strong enough here for net neutrality right now. And because of that, the FCC actually got overwhelmed with commentary being put in through their website. Now, you can still go out and do it, though. And in fact, they're going to give people an extra 5 business days in order to do that. So you'll have until September, I'm sorry, just 5 regular days, 5 actual real days, not business days, 5 actual days. You'll have until September 15th. So really about another almost 3 weeks to go on to the FCC and make your comments. I'll put a link to this so you can if you want to. Now, there's a set of rules that are proposed by the FCC. This was proposed back in May, in fact, that are either going to ban or permit the paid prioritization of internet traffic. That's the core to the net neutrality concerns. That's the core to the net neutrality legality. And as part of the process of whether they should approve this or deny it, they've opened that up to public debate. And so far they've gotten over 1 million comments. It's funny here, too. I'm reading this on The Verge. And they say some of which included death threats, many of which include profanity. So I would recommend you stay away from the death threats and profanity, but enjoy the opportunity to express your opinions. And speaking of expressing opinions and good stuff and sharing good things with the world here, I'm going to kick out. We're getting close to the end of the show, but not so close that I can't do a couple of cool sites of the week. And I've got some good ones for you here. The first one I'm going to give is not a free cool site of the week. I always like to do free cool sites. This is not free, but it's a great one. I love it. It's called Tasker. If you use Android phones, I think there's an iOS version too, but I use it on Android. It's awesome. I love it. It's if you've got a little bit of a programmer geek in you and you want to do some cool stuff with your phone, this is certainly the way to do it. It's not expensive. It's not going to kick you back too much. I'm not going to tell the price on air here, but it's not much different from a cup of good coffee. And so you get this for your Android and you can do stuff. Here's something that's been bugging me with my Android phone for a while, is that if I'm sitting in my driveway getting ready to go drive, I set up my music. I use Pandora or Spotify or Slacker or whatever. I set that up and I start to go, and then I start to drive. And what happens is I leave my Wi-Fi, and now I'm switching over to 4G, and for whatever reason, my cell phone doesn't handle that transition well, particularly if I've got my GPS up at the same time. So I created a Tasker app that is so cool. When I get into my car It knows it because it connects via my Bluetooth to my car stereo. As soon as it detects that happening, it shuts off my Wi-Fi and then pops up an audio menu on the screen for me in drive mode that I can select exactly what I want to listen to very quickly and easily, and keeps Wi-Fi off until that Bluetooth disconnects, and then it resets, turns Wi-Fi back on as soon as I walk out of my car. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I don't know any other way to do that except through Tasker. So take a look at that if you have any interest in it. Speaking of tracking and tracker stuff, this is an awesome app, especially if you're using email. I love it with Gmail. They just added Exchange support as well. No, I pull that back. I'm talking about two different things. I'm going to confuse my head. This is mainly, I think, for Gmail and thing is an email, but it will work for Exchange too. It also connects you with information through your contacts about websites you looked at. It's called Signals by HubSpot. Go to getsignals.com. I love this app. I send a lot of emails through Gmail, and one of the things that I always want to be able to do is know, when did somebody open that email up? Well, guess what? With Signals by HubSpot, it's a little plugin. This is totally free. You put it into Gmail, and bang, you can now add the request to get a notification when someone reads the email that you sent. It'll also tell you if that email's been forwarded. Now, not directly, but you'll see that it's been opened a number of times, and that is an indication that it's been forwarded and opened by other people. Signals also, if you have the full plugin in your system, will allow you to do things like if you're on a website, you can click the Signals tab, and it'll tell you any contacts and connections that you have there through your LinkedIn and so on. It'll tell you, even if you don't have any connections, it'll tell you who the directors, the CMOs, the CEOs, and so on are, related companies you could connect to, and basic facts about the company. So it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful for doing research on companies that you're looking at. I highly recommend Signals by HubSpot. It's one to get. I'm going to give you one last one. We're out of time here. The last one I want to share with you. Again, I love this because it's web-based, it's mobile, it's everywhere you want it to be. It does a much better job of dealing with your calendar and schedules than the native Gmail calendar does, in my opinion. Sunrise.am. Go to Sunrise. It's a Sunrise calendar. It's called. It's tough to find, because Sunrise is such a common word, but go to sunrise.am. You'll find it. It works on iPhone, web, Android, everywhere. It makes using calendar easy again, and I haven't had that experience with the Google Calendar for a while. I love Google Calendar. Sunrise takes it up to the next level. Take a look at that. Okay, I'm gonna go. Rob is right outside the door. I can see he's getting anxious. He wants to get in here. He's got a lot to talk to you about today. We got Science on Tap with Rob Schott First coming up next. I am right now going to leave you with the Tech Talk podcast only song of the week, which actually is going to be, you'll be able to hear the whole thing live, depending on how long it takes Rob to get set up here. I'm going to, let me see here. What do we got? Oh man, you know what? I had it all configured and set, and then it disappeared on me. If we don't have, you know, tech issues at the beginning of the week, it seems, or the beginning of the show, it seems like I can't escape it without getting it at the end of the show. All right, I'm going to leave us with, here it is. It's St. Lucia is the artist, and the song is called All Eyes on You. It's a nice little mellow tune. Enjoy it, and we will be back at you next week. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Don't go away. Stay tuned for Rob Schott First, and this is All Eyes on You by St. Lucia.
Never take back words that I said, that I will always come back to you. And even in the meantime, I will always stand by the mirror on the shelf. Call you in the nighttime, call you in the daytime, canvas up to you. 'Cause I